Now, detonate the reality bomb!
Change has come for America.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
To be as gods, you know, catapults of propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed, split-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
Scripture tells us to everything there's a season, and sometimes when seasons change, so do our roles and responsibilities as we try to serve the Lord to the best of our ability. Welcome to the program. I'm Derek Gilbert, our guest today, starting a new ministry venture, and it will be very interesting and exciting to see where things take them. One is a friend we've known for some years now, as we've met and fellowshipped at a number of prophecy conferences, and another is a gentleman I'm blessed to make the acquaintance of for the first time today. He is a longtime pastor, educator, and broadcaster, graduate of Moody Bible Institute, Dr. David Schnitker. Dave, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you today, Derek.
And our old friend and gentleman who is always in demand at prophecy conferences has devoted his ministry to teaching about the lure and the lie of the occult is Doc Marquis. Doc, welcome.
How you doing, Derek? And how's that lovely wife of yours, Sharon, doing?
She is doing she's doing great. She's doing great. I'm delighted that as part of our new role here at Skywatch TV, that people are now finding out what I've known for quite some time, which is that she's the smartest person I know. So
she is an amazing lady, isn't she?
She is. As my father told me more than once, son, you married up. So he was right about
that. There you have it.
Yeah. Well, Dave, let's turn to you just a little bit for background, because I have to confess that not having made your acquaintance previously, I don't know much about your background. I just did some very quick research here while we're trying to reconnect on Skype and see that you're a graduate of Moody in Chicago. You're originally from my old stomping grounds of St. Louis. What led you to ministry? What led you to your career as an educator and broadcaster? And where do you feel the Lord is leading you now?
Well, I had graduated from Moody Bible Institute in 1975, and my first ministry position was working for Dr. Noah Hutchings, who served at a radio ministry for 64 years.
Oh, yeah.
I was very happy to be mentored by Dr. Hutchings. I did some writing and broadcasting for him off and on for about 9 years. Then I moved to the East Coast to get some seminary education. Ended up doing pastoral work for about 25 years. But every time I would return to Oklahoma City, Dr. Hutchings would twist my arm and persuade me to write a new book or write a new article and do some more broadcasts for him. So I continued in that mode really until 2013, when in the providence of God, I met with Reverend Hutchings, and he persuaded me to return to the ministry, which I did. And for the last 2 years, I've been very busy as a writer, a broadcaster, and doing a lot of interviews with some really interesting people like Doc Marquis.
Hmm.
And that led to this interesting collaboration. And I'll just pass the ball to Doc so he can pick it up from there.
Well, Doc, we've talked at some length at some of the prophecy conferences that we've attended. Sharon and I are pleased to call you friend, honored to call you friend. But you've been more into DVD production, you know, putting your teachings in video and being the interviewee instead of the interviewer. So what direction is this new path taking?
Well, it's interesting. Derek, I'm sure you're well aware as I have been over the last decade or so that we've seen many ministries and churches infiltrated by the enemy, and one by one we've seen them being brought down and destroyed. And what was it? About a year ago, I saw another ministry, heard of internal discord, corruption, you know, anything that was ungodly and unscriptural you could see beginning to happen. And this other ministry, it hasn't got much life left. I mean, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, maybe a little longer, maybe a little less. And my heart was breaking, literally breaking over the fact that here we have another light, another Christian light that's being dimmed because of individual corruption, greed, things that, as I said, you wouldn't expect to find in any Christian. And so I'm pleading to the Lord night in, night out, begging him to give me an answer. What can be done about this? And it was somewhere around February, March, God told me one night when I was praying, he told me to start a new ministry. Now, of course, in my infinite wisdom, knowing that I'm talking to the Supreme God who calls all things into existence, the universe itself, and that it's still stretching, my immediate response to God was, are you out of your mind?
Yeah, it's a little difficult turning over the steering wheel of your life, even to the one who created it.
You know, I mean, I'm saying, God, I haven't even got two pennies to rub together, and you want me to start a new ministry? And I said, how? His response to me was three simple words. He told me, tell my children. And when he told me that, Derek, everything started flooding into my mind. I knew exactly what he wanted me to do. And so I had the privilege of, a short time after that, of over the phone meeting with Dr. David Schnitzker and the eldest daughter of the late, great Dr. Noah Hutchins. Her name is Carol Rushton. And I had heard that they had recently left their positions. And when David and I was talking, you know, I knew I was supposed to tell him something from God. So I just waited and waited and waited. And finally, I said to David, I said, David, there's things out there that you're supposed to do. Look for a ministry. And that's all I said. That's all I was allowed to say at the time. So not even, I think it was a couple of weeks later, David and Carol finally, you know, had that, you know, epiphany where they said, let's start a new ministry. And I'm thinking to myself, aha, yes, that's what you're supposed to be doing. And so it was, you know, so for about 4 months ago, we all sat down and decided that we are going to start this ministry according to what God's instructions were. And when he told me to tell my children, well, I sat back and I said to myself, you know, I've got a lot of resources, and I didn't even realize it. I've got friends like you and others, you know, in the radio and television industry. And so one by one, I started making calls, and it was determined that September 1st would be the official launch date of Southwest Prophecy Ministries. And for the whole of September, we're going to be blitzing America with one radio show after another. I've also got a couple TV shows lined up. We're going to be making constant announcements through the mailing list, through the new website. I'm a contributing writer for News with Views. That's owned by Paul Walters, incredible man of God. You do like him. And we have other ministries backing us up right now, you know, like Prophecy Watchers, you know, Gary Stearman and Paul Bowler.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And, oh, by the way, that reminds me, listen, have you heard of the International Prophecy Convention that Prophecy Watchers is going to hold?
In Rocky Mountain, in Colorado Springs next year.
At the Marriott Hotel, yes, in July.
They got some guy named Derek Gilbert who's going to be one of the speakers. I
was about to ask you, Derek, aren't you going to be speaking there along with myself?
They're giving me a slot, but I think most of my responsibility there will be doing interviews as we've done in the past. And
I thought I remembered something along that line, because when I went through the list of the 20 speakers that Bob already has, I'm going, my goodness, how did this guy get them? This is an amazing – I mean, this is the first international prophecy convention that I'm aware of, Derek.
In this genre, because it's a lot of out-of-the-box thinkers, there's no question about it. It is a group that some of the names that are on that list that I'm not sure I'm at liberty to disclose yet – are really make some eyes pop. But of course, you've got, you know, folks that we can disclose, like L.A. Marzulli, Chuck Missler, you know, of course, Gary Stearman and Tom Horn will be there to sort of oversee and MC the event. And but yeah, there are some people there who I think will be people may be surprised to hear.
And well, Bob is going to open up the ticket sales on October 13th because there's only 1,000 tickets. Let's face it, you could only pack so many people in any convention hall. And with the Marriott, Bob has cut the limit at 1,000. So I would suggest to everyone that come October 13th, you get a hold of Prophecy Watchers and you tell them you want a ticket because, ladies and gentlemen, this really is going to be the first international prophecy convention of its kind, the speakers list. And I say this because I know Derek. I know what he's going to deliver. I've heard him in the past. You're going to hear nothing but A-plus speakers, ladies and gentlemen. And you know what, Derek? I've already had people call me up, say, when's the date? How can I get the tickets? I've had others say, well, Doc, I know where I'm going to spend my vacation next year.
Yeah, it's going to be it's definitely going to be quite a gathering. And, of course, it's a beautiful location. God's creation doesn't get much more beautiful than Colorado Springs.
Not even a mile away from the base of Pikes Peak. But you know what? Now, this is – maybe I'm talking out of school here, Derek, but if I know Bob as well as I do, and you correct me if you think I'm wrong here, but I have a sneaking suspicion that he's going to maybe 3, maybe 4 months ahead of time, you know, before the convention itself, open it up to, shall we say, you know, like live streaming.
There will be live streaming. I'm sure of that. Yes.
You know, I'm not sure. Bob hasn't said anything one way or the other. I haven't seen anything on the Prophecy Watchers website. You know, that's prophecywatchers.com. I haven't seen anything yet, but if I know him, and I'm praying he does this because you and I both know how many people would jump at that because, let's face it, they just can't make the trip. But for, you know, a nominal fee, they'll be able to watch, you know, 25 speakers for the entire weekend and pick and choose whoever they want.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm almost certain that is going to be a part of the – in fact, I am certain that that's going to be part of the package. Not almost. I am certain that that's part of the package.
Anyways, we've decided that we cannot tolerate – I mean, I've just – Derek, I'm not going to lie when I say this. I've had it up to here with seeing all the corruption in these ministries. I'm tired of seeing churches being brought down. I mean, we are literally the Christian family – is being targeted like never before. Let's consider Kim Davis, you know, that Kentucky clerk who has refused to issue same-sex marriage licenses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this would never have been an issue before. But now, it's one thing after another, another, another. And you know, our brothers and sisters are just rolling over and taking it. And I am tired, as I said, of the corruption bringing down ministries, you know, by individuals who claim to be good and godly, but obviously their actions say they are not.
Yeah.
I am tired of seeing churches being infiltrated by the Illuminati and their cronies. I am tired of it, Derek. And so I want to set up a ministry that's going to set a whole new standard. We're going to bring back that beacon. You know, that light that people will be able to go to and say, this is good and godly. And that these people, Dr. David Schnitger, Carol Rushton, and myself, we mean what we say. We are Christians and we will go down fighting no matter what the coming New World Order or anything may hold. Because let's face it, Derek. I think in for as long as I've been in the ministry, which has been, what, over 36 years now, I think we are living in the last days. I think we are close to the final song that will be sung, as they say. And because of that, this is coming down to a numbers game. Either we win them to the Lord or we let them go, and they get to spend an eternity in the lake of fire. And I would wish that on no one. Mm. But we have to set up a standard, something that the people can trust, something that the people that can embrace, something that the people can say is good and godly. And our short and long-range goals are easy. Well, the first thing is, in order to achieve any of those goals, Derek, I have to be honest about this. We need every person's help. I am asking people to send in donations because this is an undertaking that is, as I said, something good and godly and something that God instructed me to do. And as I was saying, our short and long range goals are easy. The immediate thing we want to do, once we have enough donations from our brothers and sisters, is to get right back on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And we've come up with a very interesting, shall we say, lineup. I was told by Bob Ulrich what I'm attempting to do with the radio shows has never been done before. But I think it's something that will work. Now, for almost 64 years, Dr. Noah Hutchins would walk to his office, do his half-hour radio show on prophecy from Monday through Friday. That was that man's bloodline. That was his heart and soul.
He was a pioneer. He was a pioneer in that regard, in taking that kind of teaching to the airwaves.
It was phenomenal. 64 years. You know? And, well, anyway, so we want to continue the vision and the same goals that Dr. Hutchins had, but we're going to expand upon that. Every Monday, we're going to have Dr. David Schnitger do a show on prophecy. Now, his eldest daughter, Carol Hutchins Rushton, has a very unique background in Middle East affairs. Among other things, she lived in Jerusalem and wrote for the Jerusalem Post. I mean, for 8 years she was there. And so on Tuesdays, she's going to do a show called Middle East Affairs. She's going to keep us updated about the events involving Israel, what's going on in the Middle East, you know, ISIS, maybe things of that nature. Now, with me, because you know, Derek, that I was raised in an Illuminati family. I was a seventh-generation Illuminati witch. I'm going to be doing a show on Wednesdays called Conspiracy Corner. We're going to be covering topics involving the Illuminati, the New World Order, corruption in the government, you know, the UN, Council of Foreign Relations, name them. We're going to be doing those things. On Thursdays, we're going to be having a show called Bible Studies. And, you know, that can go into a million wonderful directions.
Absolutely.
We're talking, you know, all sorts of Bible studies now. And on Friday, we're going to have geopolitics. What's going on in the world?
That is a really interesting mix, and it's a balance that I think will give people a really rounded view of what's going on in the world. You can't look at what's happening in the Middle East without attaching it to prophecy. Of course, there are groups out there that have been angling for a piece of the pie, if you will. I mean, that's a bad phrase to apply to that. But looking at what's happening in the Middle East, especially regards the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. There are things that are going to overlap, and all five of these days could basically overlap significantly into one another.
Right. And so initially when I sat down and thought about these things, I was, you know, trying to relate them to prophecy and see how they were interrelated, period.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's finally when I came up with this finished product, I thought, you know, to myself, well, maybe not everyone will want to listen to, you know, something about the Middle East. Perhaps they want prophecy. Well, maybe with prophecy they might want to just have Bible studies, and maybe someone doesn't want Bible studies. Maybe they want to hear something around, you know, what's going on with the Illuminati, the New World Order, things like that. So you see, we're reaching out to these individual shows. We're trying to reach out to a much broader, larger audience. So we've got something for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're trying to accomplish with the radio show. Now, eventually down the road, perhaps a year, maybe two, depending on, you know, the finances at the time, because, ladies and gentlemen, as I says, I need your financial blessings like nothing before. This is all going to rise upon you individual folks out there.
Right.
But depending on our financial situation, a year or two down the road, we're going to start doing a television show.
That, well, I can, I'm watching Skywatch TV develop from the inside, and I can tell you that I had no idea of the amount of expense that was required. And frankly, I still don't, because I don't, you know, that I don't ask Tom. He just, you know, he takes care of it. And I worry about what goes on the other side of the camera. But they're just looking at the equipment that that Tom Horn has had to bring in for Skywatch TV and looking at some of the price tags as we look at how we might expand. Yeah, you're not talking about a something you can do on a shoestring.
Yeah, you know, this is something that I can't do. I don't have that kind of money, but God does through his children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through his children God told me to do this.
Yeah.
You know, let's face it. God does not drop $1 million in a sack in your front door.
Not often.
I mean,
no.
No, I mean, I would appreciate it if it would like that, but no, God chooses to work through his faithful children who say, hey, we're God's children. We're going to stand up and we're going to do these things.
Yeah.
Well, God calls upon us and says, okay, you said you will. Now here's the test.
Well,
and I'm asking every single brother and sister out there that we can reach through your show, Derek, and through the whole of September and afterwards, if they would send in financial blessings, their donations, so we can take what God had instructed us to do and make this miracle a reality.
Mm. Amen, brother. Let me bring Dave back into the conversation, Dr. David Schnitker. My background comes from the secular broadcasting field. I started out in radio while I was in college, got involved in secular broadcasting, and that's where I got over my fear of the microphone. Now, I'm still in the second part of my broadcasting career, which has lasted since about 1984, which is learning how to shut up again. But you're coming at this from with a background as an academician, an educator, a credentialed scholar of the Bible. And very often, it seems to me, looking at this from a layman's perspective, that a lot of men and women who come out of seminary these days don't have a lot of respect for Bible prophecy. I'm just curious, what is it about prophecy that attracted you, and why do you feel that's an important message to deliver to the world today?
Well, that's a great question, Derek. You know, as I'm sure you know, life deals with many twists and turns, and sometimes the things that we start out thinking we're going to do, God has other and better plans.
Yeah.
But when I went to Moody Bible Institute, my major was pastoral training, and New Testament Greek was my minor. And, you know, my vision of the perfect life was that I would get a little church somewhere and, you know, a nice little flock of people, loving folks, and I would be able to preach the word, you know, in this idyllic setting for the rest of my life. Well, God had other plans. When I graduated from Moody, I didn't have a church, didn't have a pastorate. But the church I attended, the pastor said, well, why don't you go down and meet with Noah Hutchings? Maybe he has a need for someone. So I did, and of course I was hired. I had no background in radio. I had no background in, quote, journalism per se, though I'd done a lot of writing in school. And so God redirected me there. And then after I got married, had a couple kids, it's like, well, it's time for me to return to my original vision, and that is being a pastor. So we moved our little family to the Washington, D.C. area, and I was able, by God's grace, to earn a degree, and then the second, and then the third, and I was in the pastorate for about 25 years. Well, God, you know, always has a way of getting one's attention. And when I was, you know, happily, blissfully pastoring a church in Virginia, in 2008, to be real specific, I heard Alex Jones on Coast to Coast Radio.
Ah, okay.
And never heard Alex Jones before, and he was talking about some stuff that seemed absolutely crazy.
Yeah. On first listen, he does. Of course, you know, most people say that about me these days.
Well, could be.
Yeah.
But anyway, one of the things he was talking about that night with George Norrie was a film that he produced when he invaded, snuck into the Bohemian Grove.
Right.
And so I went home. I was driving home from teaching a seminary class, and I got on the internet and viewed his film, Dark Secret, Inside the Bohemian Grove. And my goodness, did that open my eyes. And so I started tuning into Alex Jones. I learned the truth about many things, including 9/11. And my goodness, didn't that open my eyes, too?
Yeah.
Well, I started sharing these newfound information to folks in my church. Well, the long and short of it was I got fired.
Yeah, the left foot of fellowship, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, because I was being too conspiratorial, too controversial. And controversy is not welcomed in the established church because it might affect the offering.
Right.
That, by the way, is my little inside scoop based on 25 years of experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I started a little church in my home, a Black Robe Regiment church. We called it Liberty Bible Fellowship. And it was the most wonderful 6 months of my life because we were able to, without encumbrances, talk about the world as it really is. And talk about liberty issues, and talk about the fulfillment of Bible prophecy. And so, basically, I had a form of an awakening in 2008, and I could not go back to just being a, quote, local church pastor that's just concerned about, quote, local church issues. So I became a rogue pastor at that point, 2012, when I was ejected from my church. And shortly after that, I got the call from Noah Hutchings, and I thought, well, perhaps God is expanding my opportunity for influence beyond my living room. And so I saw this as a call from God to, in effect, return to my roots with broadcasting, this time with a gripping challenge on my heart that we are in the last days, and the tyranny is on the march, and Christians really need to be awakened and alerted to the real scoop of what's going on in the world today. And I found that at least from my experience, the established church is not necessarily fertile grounds for that kind of information.
No, you're right about that. And that's, again, that tracks with my perception looking in from the outside as a layperson. But I always find it interesting to hear what someone like yourself who's taken the other path and gone into the ministry and has seen what the church looks like from the inside out, as it were. Why do you think Christians who profess to believe in the supernatural realm, believing in an omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent God, believing theoretically anyway, that the Apostle Paul knew what he was writing about when he wrote that we're not wrestling against human opponents, but against principalities and powers and rulers of spiritual darkness, that we just blinder ourselves, for the most part, to the supernatural war that is taking place around us. The headlines in the news are merely the shadows on the wall of the real battles taking place, but yet most Christians seem unaware of it. Why is that?
Well, Derek, my view is that most Christians have a fairy tale religion. They believe in the nice Bible stories, you know, from the Old Testament, the supernatural, you know, the Philistine giant, et cetera, et cetera. It makes for good Sunday school material, makes for good drama, but they really don't believe it. They really don't believe that that's the kind of world that we live in today. And that kind of world absolutely scares them to death. So they would rather live, and I'm being brutally honest here, and I don't mean any disrespect to any individual Christian or to pastors, etc. But just from my inside perspective, 25 years on the inside, that many Christians and many churches have a fairy tale religion and are absolutely scared to death that the world may be today as it was in Bible days, where you had demons, where you had giants, where you had Satan, you know, wrestling with people, where you had people being slain, you know, by God, slain by angels, where you have real spiritual warfare.
And, of course, that's the picture that the Bible presents of the last days and the days soon to follow in the tribulation.
Mm-hmm.
It's really scary stuff for most Christians, and so they would prefer to live in a fairy tale world of kind of devotional platitudes and, you know, Jesus is my buddy, and if I just go to church and do all my religious things and nothing bad is going to happen to me or my children. And it's kind of a huddling in a fetal position kind of mentality that absolutely does not equip Christians for the days in which we live.
Hmm. There are a lot of people who follow Alex Jones, a lot of people who will buy into the idea that there is a conspiracy out there, that there is a political class or an elite class that want to rule over the rest of us, but they don't see the whole picture. They don't see it from a spiritual perspective. You find people like this hanging out at certain online fora like Above Top Secret or Godlike Productions, and it almost seems to me that they're just addicted to the adrenaline rush that comes from believing that doom is imminent. Christians, we have a holy book, or the guidebook to the supernatural, as L.A. Marzulli would call it, that tells us that that's the kind of world in which we live. Explains it. This is, you know, part and parcel of the worldview. So on the one hand, you've got the people who buy the conspiracy but don't have any hope because they don't believe that there's an answer. And then on the other hand, you get people who've got the answer, but they don't see the problem.
Right. Absolutely. I think you have summarized that very well.
Hmm.
And that really merges right into what our philosophy is. I wrote an article on our website, which, by the way, is swpm.us. And I wrote the feature article for September, and I called it Looking and Occupying. And what I tried to do is articulate that there are two kinds of extremes that I've seen in Christian media or alternative media. There's the looking only kind of ministry, and all they do is talk about looking for Jesus and all the signs related to that, and that's wonderful. It really is. I don't denigrate that. And then there's the occupying only. The folks like Alex Jones, and I've met Alex Jones. I believe he's a sincere Christian. And he is so involved with occupying, fighting the enemy, you know, trying to turn the world around, that I don't hear a lot in the way of hope in terms of God's intervention.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to do at Southwest Prophecy Ministries is blend the two. Both are true. It is true that we believe the Scripture teaches that we're to be looking for the blessed hope, the glorious appearing of our Lord Jesus, and it could come at any time. But at the same time, Jesus said we're to be occupying until he comes.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that we are to be salt and light. We are to be hindering evil, exposing and opposing it until Jesus comes. That's what Christians are supposed to do, in addition to the normal things, evangelism, church growth, etc. So why can't we have a ministry that does both, that's truly tied into reality, in even the darkness of it, the conspiracy of it, the reality of it? But at the same time, we say there is a hope, and that hope is beyond that of our own efforts. Now, our efforts are important as a rear guard action, in my view, not to reconstruct society, but as a rear guard action against evil. But it is Jesus that's going to rescue us from the approaching tyranny. And then some years later, he's going to come back and crush evil and establish his kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't we have reality in all of its darkness at the same time have hope with all of its brightness?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we're standing shoulder to shoulder in that then, because that is exactly what Sharon and I have been trying to do on our own for 10 years. We're blessed to become a part of Skywatch TV here in recent months. The work of Tom Horn and his family has very much followed that path. Doc, we know that you've been treading that path for quite some time. Gary Stearman and Bob Ulrich at Prophecy Watchers. Sharon was following their work before she and I even met. And that was, you know, 20 years, well, what, 18 years ago that we met? Yeah. So, and we've just been delighted that we've been able to, the Lord has led us on a path that's allowed us to do what we're doing now. Because you're right, this is a completed worldview. It's a worldview that explains why the planet is in such a mess, our creation is in such a mess that it's in, but it also tells us that when it's all said and done, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. The good. So we're you know, and I think first and foremost, at least in my perspective, and I'll let you gentlemen both comment on this, it seems to me that if we're going to have any success at all in this rear guard action, and I agree with you 100%, Dave, that that's exactly what we're doing. We're holding territory until the cavalry comes over the hill, and he's going to be coming in the clouds at the head of a heavenly host. That's the cavalry, the real cavalry, that's going to save things, not us through our own works, but him working through us until such time as he returns in, himself. And I got so busy on my little rabbit trail there that I forgot where I was going with that question. I know where I'm going now. It just took me a minute. I just had a tap dance long enough till my brain caught up with my mouth. Dave, I'll pose this to you, and then Doc, I'll turn back to you for your take on this. It seems to me that our biggest job and our biggest challenge is not waking up those in the secular society who already see that there's a problem. It's waking up those in the church to the reality of the supernatural realm, the supernatural war. What are your thoughts on that, Dave?
I absolutely agree. I think that many faithful church-going people have been inoculated against the truth. And again, I'm going to sound brutally honest. I think they have been propagandized within the church and without from the church from accepting a whole range of truth that falls outside of the accepted realm of truth. For example, there's a great deal of propaganda that has been imposed upon the American people. Really since 1963, with the assassination of John Kennedy.
Yes.
And the establishment's invention of a term called the conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
And that word has become anathema to American people, and particularly many in the church. If you start talking truth that's outside of the realm of the establishment fables, and I'll just call it what it is, fables, like the Kennedy fable, the lone gunman, and the 9/11 fable of, you know, people with box cutters, if you fall outside the realm of the establishment fables, you are labeled a conspiracy theorist, and people turn off their brains, and they anathematize you.
Mm-hmm.
And people who actually use their brains and come to reasonable conclusions based upon facts and research, those people are demonized in many churches. I, for example, have a friend that attended a church that I knew of, and through his research, he came to certain understanding about certain truths. He was not only kicked out of that church, they put a court order against him that he could not step foot on the church property.
Hmm.
Why? Because he had the audacity to know the truth and to speak the truth, but it was outside the realm of, you know, establishment thinking in that local church. Now, he's a fine, wonderful Orthodox believer, but he was audacious enough to think for himself and then open his mouth.
Mm.
And I have found that in many establishment churches, and I don't say this with any joy, that there is an intolerance for truth outside of the accepted realm within that particular church or denomination. And so the folks I know, and again, this is a sad thing, the folks I know that are really waking up, they're experiencing that rejection, that demonization, and they're leaving the church.
Mm-hmm.
They're meeting in homes with friends, you know, like-minded friends, and they have had to leave their establishment churches because those churches are no longer friends of the truth.
That very much tracks with our experience. We had a number of people who at prophecy conferences over the last few years would come up to Sharon and myself and say, we don't have a home church now because it's not teaching from Scripture, for one thing. It's not teaching the shed blood of Jesus Christ, sin and redemption. It's not teaching prophecy. So that's why we started an online Bible study on Sunday mornings. But it tracks with what we've been hearing at prophecy conferences. And Doc, you can confirm this. That's one of the things that people are most... That's why when we attend these prophecy conferences talking about end times and the return of the Antichrist and the attempts of the enemy through the occult to lure our children and our grandchildren away, in spite of all these dark topics, people attending these conferences have a sense of joy because they know the truth. They know God has it all under control. But secondly, And maybe even more importantly, it's the sense of fellowship, knowing finally that they are not alone.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head, Derek, because there's really two types of Christians in this life, and there should only be one, but there's two now. We have the Christians who go to church on Sunday, get their Sunday school fix, and then they leave and live their, shall we say, their version of Christianity and how things are. Mm-hmm. Then there are those Christians who, for the most part, if they dare speak the truth, they're going to be ostracized like that because they're willing to admit that there is a conspiracy going on here and that it's against those who follow Jesus Christ. And those Christians will be the ones that will stand up for the truth, but they'll be the ones condemned faster than anyone else because how dare you confuse me with the truth? How dare you confuse me with true Christianity? So many of the others want to just stand in their little Christian comfort zones or be pew warmers, and that's being a Laodicean Christian, mm-hmm. as Revelation chapter 3 points out. And Christ himself said he can't use them because they're noncommittal. They won't commit one way to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, others who see the truth, as you just pointed out, Derek, we've met how many thousands and thousands and thousands of them at various conferences and conventions and prophecy summits where these people who literally, as you pointed out, they're fellowshipping in their own homes. And I think this is what it may end up as because the church has failed in its mission. Let's just say it for what it is. It is a complete and utter failure.
Mm-hmm.
If the church was successful, everyone would have been saved by now instead of cowering in their little comfortable church buildings where they can keep the truth out and they can just preach the fuzzy-wuzzy make-me-feel-good yeah. Bible.
Jesus warned us that this would happen, though. I mean, when he told us that the poor would always be with you and that the path would be narrow and few would find their way. When I was younger and a really baby Christian or maybe not really understanding what the word meant, what it meant to be a Christian, I thought, well, that's just a really, you know, depressing, pessimistic view of the human heart. But, of course, Christ knows the human heart better than any of us does. The reason the poor will always be with us is because there are those out there who want to take advantage of our fellow man. We want to serve ourselves at the expense of all others around us. And in fact, he referred to Satan, the deceiver, the accuser, as the god of this world. So we are, as Dave pointed out, effectively behind enemy lines.
Right. And so you see, this is why the necessity, and I do mean the necessity, of Southwest Prophecy Ministries coming into existence. Mm. Because, and mind you, going with what you're saying, this was under the orders of God. This was not something I would have come up with. I think you know, Derek, I've been running It's a God Thing Productions, and I've been in the ministry for over 36 years now.
Right, right.
And I graduated at Louisiana Baptist University, a class of 84, a wonderful Christian university. I received a Class A education, and I didn't think I'd be doing this. But the thing is, God has seen the necessity of this because his children are not behaving like his children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Southwest Prophecy Ministry has come into existence not just out of necessity, but out of a burden to see not just the children of God come back and start behaving like the children of God and, you know, teaching them what's really going on through the radio shows, but also to reach out to a very dark and dying world. This world is spiraling out of control into the realm of chaos, which will produce the Antichrist, and from my perspective, not too far down the road. And so we have to be about our Father's business, fulfilling the Great Commission, getting people saved, telling the people the truth of what's going on, and this is exactly what we're going to be doing at Southwest Prophecy Ministries.
Yeah.
But as I said before, I can't do it. David can't do it. Carol can't do it. We can't do it without people's donations. If they would help us make what God has given us to do a genuine, miraculous reality.
Well, that sounds like a cue to ask the big important question, which is where do people find your website again, and how do they support Southwest Prophecy Ministries?
That's a presidential question.
Yes, our website is www.swpm.us. And once folks go to our homepage, they will see a tab up at the top that says Donate. Click on the tab, and the rest is easy.
And there's a welcoming video there from Dr. David Schnitger and Carol. You'll have to forgive me. Carol, her last name again is?
Rushton.
Right.
Yes.
And tell Derek, if you would, David, about how our bookstore came together. Because we've got a bookstore.
Yes, we have a bookstore. We have about 70 products in our bookstore. Of course, all of Doc's films. But the rest were almost all donated from Christian ministries, friends of ours in the ministry, basically donated product to help us get off the ground.
Fantastic.
And we we're just so grateful for the generosity of folks like Tom Sharp and Chuck Baldwin, Larry Pratt, and others who have basically said, hey, we'll help you get started. We're going to donate some products.
And Prophecy Watches were the first ones to give, I might add, because, the bookstore and things of that's in my domain. And Gary Stearman was the very first one who sent us a whole box, a big old box of, his wonderful book, Time Travelers of the Bible.
Oh, yes. Gary and Bob are great. Great guys. We've gotten a chance to know both of them and their wives. Doris Stearman is just a dear, dear woman. So we're, again, just as proud as can be. And, Sharon is a bit of a fangirl when it comes to Gary Stearman because she's been following his work for such a long time.
oh, let me tell you, Derek, the guy scares me. I don't mean in a bad way. I'm just thinking, my goodness, this is such a godly man. Who am I? And, oh, my goodness, I don't know what to say when I'm in his presence.
Well, and that's why, being here at Skywatch TV, which of course he helped Tom Horn to launch as the host of the program when it first started up, for him to sort of hand over the headphones to me is very humbling. Because, I'm coming at this as a guy who's coming in from the secular perspective. I've got a background as a top 40 disc jockey and then a talk show host and sometimes news reader, writer, and I'm trying to catch up to a fellow like Gary Stearman who's got a little librarian inside of his head that's got everything cataloged.
Those chipmunks never take a break. When I was in the United States Army, I'm an old Army vet. I served at the end of the Vietnamese conflict, and I went to med school. I was a graduate of the American Academy of Health Sciences of Science, and that was too long ago for me to admit to. And then after I left the military, and God saved me on April 15th, 1979, and I left the Order of the Illuminati. Well, I went to my Christian university. I felt I needed my Christian education, and I went to Louisiana Baptist University in Shreveport, Louisiana. And I've been in the ministry for 36 years now, and every single time I even get close to Gary Stearman, I just don't know what to say. He just reeks of knowledge and goodness and godliness, and I'm saying to myself, oh my goodness, I never know what to say to him except for, how you doing, Gary, and to get out of there.
Yeah, well, that's why
I don't know what to say to someone like you.
Well, I had to laugh recently because Gary was a guest on Skywatch TV. We talked about his book, Time Travelers of the Bible, and somebody posted a comment about the program saying, well, the background is red and blue, and it took Gary about a minute to make a pyramid with his hands, so he must be... He must be into the occult. Like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Gary Stearman is about as far from that as you can possibly get.
Oh, please. Yeah. And the thing is, you know what? And I'm not going to be super critical here, but these people think that they're seeing the pyramid here, this sign there, all right. That must be occultic there. These people are chasing ghosts because it isn't like that. It's vastly different than most people realize. I was a seventh-generation Illuminati witch, for goodness sakes. I have more than 200 years' worth of occult knowledge of the Illuminati in my head still. And trust me, folks, it just doesn't work the way these people are trying to tell you.
Yeah.
I've seen so many wannabes and Johnny come lately, and they'll eventually just fall to the wayside.
Yeah.
But when you have someone like someone so good, so godly, like a Gary Stearman out there, folks, let me tell you one thing. He's going to endure anything you could possibly throw at him because his sure foundation is Jesus Christ. And I'll tell you right now, that man is a genuine blessing and a giant in the Christian community.
Amen. Well, we're happy to be pulling in the same direction, and we pray for your success as well. Doc Marquis, Dr. David Schnitger, founding members of the Southwest Prophecy Ministries, the website swpm.us. Gentlemen, Doc, always a pleasure to talk with you. And Dave, a real pleasure to get to know you. Hope we can meet you face-to-face one of these days.
Give my best to Sharon.
Will do.
Well, Derek, I'm looking forward to meeting you at the International Prophecy Conference.
All right. Look forward to that.
Bob Ulrich was so generous, he says he's going to allow our whole staff to come and not make us pay for our registration. So we're going to be there.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to that. And we'll, I'm sure, touch base with you before then. Bless you both. As always, the show notes are online at vftb.net, and there'll be a direct link from there to the website for Southwest Prophecy Ministries. Doc Marquis and Dr. David Schnitger. Look forward to meeting Dr. Schnitger. Interesting conversation, although it was too brief, but it sounds like from the discussion that we're pretty much on the same page. Always enjoy talking to Doc. Interesting fellow. If we don't see him sooner, we'll certainly see him next July at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, which is co-sponsored by Prophecy Watchers, Gary Stearman and Bob Ulrich, and Skywatch TV, of course. So we'll be there, Sharon and I, to do interviews, and I'll also have an opportunity to speak. And hopefully with the lead time, I'll be able to get my act together, get disciplined about actually researching and writing between now and then. We're also going to be this October, in fact, just over a month from now, in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. This will be my first trip to Idaho. I don't think I've ever been west of, well, I've been to Colorado Springs a couple of times, but never to Idaho. The 10th Annual Strategic Perspectives Conference, that's Koinonia Institute, Chuck Missler's ministry, hosting it. Tom Horn will be a featured speaker along with Gary Stearman, others, Joel Richardson, Bob Cornuke of the Base Institute, Colonel Bob McGinnis, a number of other speakers as well, and we will be there to conduct a number of interviews. Possibly to collate them into another project, but that's still in the discussion phases. Certainly to interview those experts while we have the opportunity to do so. And looking forward to seeing Idaho. I understand it's beautiful there. So if you're planning attending the Strategic Perspectives Conference, koinoniainstitute.org is the website for information. We hope to see you there. It will be streamed online, as many conferences are these days. The internet really facilitates getting the word out from conferences like this. The fellowship at a conference really makes it worthwhile attending if it's possible for you. But if it's not, the messages are still available at a reasonable cost via the internet. So the Strategic Perspectives Conference, you can purchase a package where you just see the speakers or see the messages from the speakers. And the same will be true next July for the Rocky Mountain Prophecy Conference as well. A couple of things to discuss. There's an article at the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. I think it's IET.org. I keep forgetting what the acronym stands for. A lot of transhumanist articles there, and it's a site that Sharon and I tend to watch just because it's important to know what the leading thinkers in that movement are thinking. And there was an article that was published last week on the 10th that really kind of illustrates the divide that separates transhumanists from committed Christians. The opening line of the piece, I quote, "One of the biggest existential challenges that transhumanists face is that most people don't believe a word we're saying, however entertaining they may find us. They think we're fantasists when in fact we're talking about a future just over the horizon," end quote. Well, welcome to our world. That's exactly how Christians, especially Christians who believe in prophecy, feel. But the problem is that while we're saying, look, we all live forever, the only question you need to answer and really need to concern yourself with is where you plan to spend eternity. Transhumanists look at us and they say this, and I quote from the article, "Let's be clear about who these naysayers are. They hold the following views. One, they believe that they will live no more than 100 years and quite possibly much less." In a physical form, that's correct. But that is incorrect at a very fundamental level. Point number two, quoting again, "They believe that this limited longevity is not only natural but also desirable, both for themselves and everyone else," end quote. Don't know that it's desirable. It's just the way it is. We're just dealing with reality here. Point number three, quote, "They believe that the bigger the change, the more likely the resulting harms will outweigh the benefits," end quote. Well, yeah, because essentially what you've done is start with a presumption, Mr. Transhumanist, that God doesn't exist and that your only path to immortality is to make yourself into a god through genetics, robotics, artificial intelligence, and nanotechnology. It is a fundamentally 180 degrees opposed view of opposed to that of the Christian worldview, which says you are an eternal being. You are going to live forever, just not in this physical form. And we were not created to become gods. We are not God. But by trying to become gods, you've bought into the oldest lie in the book. Ye shall be as gods. And then this author of this piece goes on to say, "This much is clear. If you're a transhumanist, ordinary people are zombies. We're the walking dead because we are resigned, in their view, to mortality. And we want to condemn them to death as well. And they feel that death is optional." Zoltan Istvan, the author of The Transhumanist Wager, has said pretty much the same thing, that he believes death is optional, that the means to overcome death are at hand, and that any attempt by other people, religious types or whoever, to prevent them from attaining immortality are essentially condemning them to death. In other words, we're trying to kill them. And the author of this piece at IEET.org says, there are three general options on how to deal with zombies. One, you kill them once and for all. Two, you avoid them. Or three, you enable them to be fully alive. And, of course, the irony here is that by accepting Jesus Christ, we've already achieved point number three. We are already fully alive. Thank you very much. The problem is that people who are committed transhumanists may, if you follow their line of reasoning to its logical conclusion, that death is optional and that we as Christians or anyone who oppose the idea of attaining or attempting to attain immortality through technology, that we are trying to kill them by imposing on them a death that they feel is unnecessary and optional, they have the right to defend themselves by any means necessary, just as you or I would defend our wives, our daughters, our grandchildren, our children and grandchildren by any means necessary if they were threatened. So it is a bit disturbing. But that is the fundamental difference between the transhumanist and the Christian. We already are fully alive, and we understand that they already are eternal beings. They just haven't recognized that. They refuse to accept it. To them, this mortal shell is all there is, and so they have to make it last as long as possible. But unlike the bright, shiny Star Trek future that they envision for themselves, if they achieve immortality at all, they're more likely to be like those, you know, old 1940s and 50s beater cars that drive around Cuba because Cuba hasn't been able to import any new ones for generations. They keep swapping out part after part after part. In fact, the irony of this is that they themselves are the zombies. They are the walking dead. If they commit to that future where they're just going to keep swapping out part for part to maintain this limited, finite, mortal existence, there are none so blind as those who will not see. Well, anyway, just to be quick about it, Coming up on A View from the Bunker, we've got a couple of really interesting interviews, I think. The mystery of the Georgia Guidestones has been solved. The mystery of the Georgia Guidestones has been solved. If you're not familiar with the Georgia Guidestones, they are these giant granite slabs erected in a shape, a monument shape. I'm going to have to ask Chris Pinto about this when we talk today. And this interview will be posted on Wednesday, the 16th, so you won't have to wait very long for this one. Chris Pinto and our friend Dr. Future, Dr. Michael Bennett, collaborated on a brand new documentary film called Dark Clouds Over Elberton. Elberton, Georgia, rural Georgia, small community, is the location of this monument, which contains what have been called the Ten Commandments of the New Age or the Ten Commandments of the Illuminati. And they are somewhat disturbing because the first command on this monument is to maintain human population at 500 million. Now, the Guidestones were built in 1980. They were erected in 1980. At the time, the world population was about 5 billion. So basically, the Georgia Guidestones and the men behind it were recommending eliminating 90% of the world's population. The globe now has over 7 billion. So we're talking over 90% of the world would have to go in order to achieve this goal. And there are other things there, but it's very much a... well, it reminds me of the interview with Mark Musser, Nazi Oaks, in his book Nazi Oaks, about the radical green movement that fueled the Nazi agenda. It's a eugenist worldview. And, of course, the people who hold this type of worldview, when they say that the world is overpopulated and that we need to get rid of people, it's never them and their friends. You know, they're never at the front of the line to volunteer to sacrifice themselves for Mother Earth, for Gaia. Anyway, the overriding mystery, though, the number one question that people have had for 35 years about the Georgia Guidestones is, who is R.C. Christian? He's the man who walked into a contracting company in Elberton, Georgia, which is known for its granite works. They've got access to some wonderful supplies of granite. They call themselves the granite capital of the world. And they carve a lot of monuments, headstones, and so forth that they ship all over the country, all over the world. And this gentleman introduced himself as R.C. Christian, not my real name. And in order to do business, because, you know, erecting these four giant slabs was a costly proposition, the contractor had to have some financial arrangements made. So a gentleman named Wyatt Martin, president of the local bank, was put in contact with R.C. Christian, and Mr. Martin has sworn to take the identity of Mr. Christian to the grave. But Chris Pinto and Michael Bennett obtained some clues during their interviews with Mr. Martin. He didn't let the cat out of the bag directly, but he gave Chris and Mike clues that led to the resolution of the mystery. So we'll talk to Chris Pinto about that. The mystery of the Georgia Guidestones solved. We won't reveal the name of R.C. Christian. I don't feel that's fair because that's the big reveal in the documentary film. And Chris and Mike put a lot of personal time and expense into creating the documentary. So I'm just, disclosure up front, not going to tell you who it is during the program, but we will discuss what it means. Because knowing the identity of R.C. Christian sheds some light on the worldview that went into creating the Georgia Guidestones. Then next Sunday, post an interview I did yesterday, or Saturday rather, with science fiction author John C. Wright. If you've been listening for a while, you've probably heard me mention his name once or twice. He's written some fiction that has really stuck with me, the kind of haunting stuff that you kind of carry with you for a while. One was an anthology of stories set in a world created by an author about 100 years ago called The Nightland. This collection of stories called Awake in the Nightland is beautiful. It's haunting. not Christian in worldview necessarily. And as John disclosed during the interview, he wrote those stories before he became a Christian. Because, you see, Mr. Wright, who's a very intelligent and very eloquent man, was a committed atheist until he had a life-changing event. You know, I sometimes joke about the spiritual 2x4 that the Holy Spirit whacked me with. John was hit with the equivalent of a 16-inch I-beam or wide flange beam. he really got hit, and I'm thankful it didn't take that to get me to kind of open my eyes to reality. So we'll discuss John C. Wright. We'll kind of call the program Science Fiction and Awful Truth, which is borrowed from the subtitle of a collection of essays that he's written. He holds the unique distinction, John does, of holding the record for most nominations for the Hugo Award, which is an award handed out annually to authors in the science fiction field, along with the Nebula, considered one of the two most prestigious awards in the field. But in recent years, it's become pretty clear that the award, the Hugo anyway, has been reserved for a certain clique that hold a particular worldview that is, it's not stretching it to say that it is anti-Christian. Well, John this year was nominated for 6 Hugos. And in every single category for which he was nominated, the award went to no award. In other words, those who were, you know, the clique controlling the awards were so outraged that an outspoken Christian was nominated that they actually awarded no award rather than see him walk home with a Hugo. We'll talk about that, and you will hear that interview on September 21st. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.